You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 125 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and Cashel Company. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse, brought to you in cooperation with the Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
On today's show, we're talking to Nick Larkin about the new sport, cross-country equestrian, which is perfect for the thoroughbred. We introduce two familiar faces, Chris Bennings and Jody Bush, who round out our Making the Makeover class. We then get a training tip on finding balance with your standardbred from Winnie Morgan Nemeth from New Vocations and bring you our adoptable horse of the week.
And they're off on Retired Racehorse Radio, the podcast that is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse.
This is Joy Orr in Detroit, Michigan.
And this is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York, and you're listening to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Well, Kristen, it has been a week. So
God, yeah, it's only Wednesday, and I'm like, I'm ready for the weekend.
Yes. So for any new listeners, sorry, this is the first episode you're going to hear, but I promise the guests are going to be great.
Worth it. Stick with us.
It's worth it. But we pre-record, so it's actually Wednesday, April 3rd, but you are hearing this on April 10th or whenever you choose to listen to this episode. And it's been a week for both Kristen and I, who ironically both had vet appointments, I think at the same time on the same day.
Yeah, like simultaneously, we were like, here's what I learned today. So that was fun.
That was an interesting experience, a little too weird. Not sure that's the content I was hoping for.
Because we're long distance besties living parallel lives. It's fine.
Nothing weird about it at all. I know both of us didn't get, I wouldn't say the news was good or bad, but
mixed.
It is what it is.
Mixed news. It's horses, right? It's horses. And sport horse vets. And like, you know, up here, like the corner of New York in which I live, we are sort of perfectly positioned between several great sport horse clinics, but they're all like 2.5 or more hours away. So it was like a full day affair. You know, Eric and I hooked up the trailer early, went to the barn, got the horses kind of cleaned up, which is a challenge because they live outside and it had rained the night before. You know, and then hit the road and drove through all that horrible weather that everybody got on April 2nd, and then finally had our appointment. But it was like, it's an all day deal. Like,
yes.
So we were pretty wiped by the time we were done, and like a good chunk of money for. Yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah, that's the other thing. And I mean, well worth it. Also, exactly. If you haven't listened to our episode on insurance, listen to it. Recommend it. Just saying.
That would have been a good idea.
It would have been a great idea. In hindsight. Yeah.
And oh, well. But it's fine. Like there was, before everyone's like, oh my God, what happened? I'll just run down our experience. So Jobber, I think probably long time listeners at this point know Jobber has cutaneous lymphoma. Jeez, it's my first day. So sorry. Which is like a fairly rare cancer in, the cutaneous level of the skin. So it started out as like a big lump on his forehead that got surgically removed last spring. But while that was happening, they found another sort of suspicious area on his sheath. And in the past year, that's grown into quite a nice lump, which our vet very nicely measured and took some photos. And we're still waiting to hear back from Ohio State to see if it's something that can be removed. When they first saw it last year, they were like, yeah, this is too diffuse for us to do anything with. So just keep an eye on it. And I was like, cool. Well, it's really grown. So I don't know if it's grown to something they can remove yet or not. So we're waiting to hear back to see what we do with that. The good news is that Jobber doesn't know he has cancer and is still like his same fire breathing dragon self. So I'm not going to tell him. I'm just going to let him keep on rocking. And then while we were there too, he is prone to what we've affectionately just started calling winter fat leg because they live in a smaller sacrifice lot in the winter. And then they're out on like 20 acres of pasture in the summer. So with all that walking around in the summer, his legs are fine. But in the winter where he's more confined and doesn't move around as much, he's just prone to like thick filling legs. You know, we've done the whole thing. It's not cellulitis. It's not an injury. But they are starting to not go down very well. So for fun, I had the thicker one ultrasounded because there was also what I would like had convinced myself was some sort of like ruptured tendon lump, even though the horse has been 100% sound. But I was like, this is a career ending tendon injury. He's not taking a lame step. And she's like, yeah, sure enough, it's just a fat leg. So that was
winter factor was the thing. It was.
Yeah, we passed it around
group chat.
Yeah, we passed it around to all of us. So, and I was willing to pay for an ultrasound to soothe my brain that there's actually nothing wrong with him. So other than the cancer, that horse is fine. So that was fun. Now he just has a naked leg because they had to shave it. So yeah. Now he has a cold, fat leg, but it was cold all along. And now it's super cold because there's no hair on it. So that's fun for him. And then Shorty came along because Shorty has recurrent uveitis, which fortunately, knock wood, has not been recurrent since he got intravitreal injections a few years ago. That seems to have really just brought everything under control. So
seems
he
like
has
a future podcast topic.
I know I should really track down that vet has retired. I got to track her down and see if she wants to come on, tell us more about that. Cause it was actually the first time she had done the procedure. And it was really funny because she, at that time, she kicked me and my working student out. She's like, I don't want you guys to watch this. Like, I would like to do this unsupervised. We're like, great, fine, totally get it. But it was the day that New York State closed down for COVID. So we were just like driving around at loose ends because nowhere was open. So that was fun. But anyway, ever since he had that done, his uveitis has been super under control. And of course, you know, if anyone's followed along on our social, they've seen pictures of him in his goggles, which, you know, are just UV blocking to help protect his eyes from further damage. But fortunately, all that overprotectiveness seems to be working because he hasn't had any progression in the cataracts and he's had no flare-ups. So he goes for a routine eye exam every spring, which is like really funny to think like we put him on the trailer for a total of 5 hours for like a 5-minute exam, but we do anyway. And then while he was there, I was like, well, we have some extra money. So let's take some x-rays of his feet to show to our farrier because he does have really weird feet. Mm-hmm. And for years we've suspected that like there must be something weird going on with the bony structures in here because these feet just grow in different directions and they're very odd. And he's like extremely sensitive if you get just even a tiny bit too close or too short with the trim. And turns out his feet are fine. So he just is prone to really weird feet. Yeah, I was like, cool. I mean, that's great, but also that's really annoying because now I got to figure out. So now we're going down the deep, dark rabbit hole of like changing everything about him biomechanically to see if that helps. You know, he's loading his feet in a weird way that's making them flare and crack and do some odd things. So stay tuned for that fun adventure. But yeah, the good news is that like clinically, there's nothing wrong with Shorty either. So,
well, that's good. That's good. And
it's fine.
For anyone who might be very upset about Jobber 2, it's not like an immediate situation. Like you're still waiting to hear everything, but it sounds like hard decisions don't have to be made probably tomorrow.
No, I don't think so. And I will say like the one on his forehead, he harbored that for like 4 years. Before it even occurred to me to have that biopsy, because I was told it was a cyst and I was like, oh, okay, cool. And it just sort of like sat there. So I'm not thinking like, oh my gosh, like it's, you know, stage 4, something horrible. Yes. Like that the one he has now on his sheath that might also just sit there for a few years. Like it's okay. So,
yes. So if anyone wasn't sure about your tongue.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Everyone's that, like, wow, she's being really flippant about it. Like, well, there's nothing to worry about right now. So
yes, everything's as okay as it can be for right now. And
yeah, cancer is a scary word, but
yeah,
he's doing okay.
It definitely shows up differently in horses than it does in people. And
for sure.
Again, we could probably do a whole segment on that with a vet at some point. If that's an interest, let us know. We're happy to do it for you. And then similar with Astrid, I was suspicious. She had actually gotten quite dangerous in some ridden work, which was weird because things have been going super well coming back into work. And then all of a sudden, she became like almost unrecognizably dangerous. And I was suspicious of some things in her neck area for a while. She consistently needs like the same chiropractic work, and it's very difficult and it's obvious it's painful for her. And we didn't know if it was just old injury, scar tissue, just her giraffing. Like, who knows? But it wasn't. She'd never been dangerous under saddle before. And then I was taking a lesson 2 weeks ago and she actually was like stopping and breathing in really heavy, like sucking up air. She'd turn around and try to bite my legs, which normally is a sign of ulcers, but she's never done that ever in the entire time we've been together. And Then she tried to buck me off. Then she tried to bolt, and it was just unrecognizable. And I stopped my lesson. I didn't push her. I'm like, we were just walking. That's like the worst part. I was just trying to walk in a circle. So I wasn't asking anything demanding. And the fact we got that intense was super bizarre. And I trusted my gut and was like, I'm going to stop. I'm going to get down. Like, this isn't normal. I did have a panic attack. Just like, I didn't know if it was myself being anxious and projecting on the horse. But, you know, if you have a gut feeling about something, look into it is my advice. Because I'm really glad I did. I ended up getting our sports vet out too. Again, same day as Kristen. And it's like, I just think there's something wrong in the neck. And sure enough, Astrid has moderate arthritis through her C5 through C7 vertebrae. The upper vertebrae look really good, which is a positive. So suggesting it's probably not genetic. It's most likely due to injury or strain. So that's positive. The downside is it's not curable. It will most likely always limit her to a degree, and actually putting her into hard work, even if treatments go well to minimize pain and make her comfortable, will actually probably irritate the arthritis and cause it to progress quicker, where treatments wouldn't last as long. So it doesn't mean anything awful besides, I'm going to say it's awful. It's less pressure, but we probably won't be having much of a career in dressage anytime soon. We'll see what the treatment does and what comes out from it. Maybe Western dressage. The vet seemed optimistic when we talked about that. Because the interesting thing with the lower vertebrae arthritis is if the head carriage is long, like if they keep their neck longer, more like a traditional Western horse, it actually is good to keep them in work and helps them stay strong and create that support rather than making them a pasture potato, as long as it's not severe and they start to have a neurological issues like tripping, not knowing where their legs are. They can develop wobblers, that kind of thing. It's when you start to push them into the more traditional English headsets. I'm not talking about way behind the vertical like we've been seeing in the news. Like, that definitely is a big indicator of horse injury in the neck long term, if you want to research that. Again, happy to make this an episode if someone is interested in it. But talking about the true just balancing on the bit and kind of asking for that roundness, it is an athletic ask of them. And if they're already compromised, they might just not have the bone structure to support it. And it's not a fair ask of her. So we're starting shockwave therapy. That seemed to be the less intrusive while also looking promising opportunity. You can do injections. It just comes with a high risk of infection since you're injecting into the bone. And I decided, why start there if we can try something that's more comfortable? And normally they sedate them for the shockwave. Astrid, her sedation already wore off from x-rays, and she loved the shockwave therapy, like completely unsedated. She likes body work. And I think because I've exposed her to, it's mostly the loud noise of it, right, more than a feeling. And she has her own massage gun, and my massage gun is louder than the shockwave thing was. Mm. And she's like, this is nice. Seems okay.
I love that.
So that was promising. She made the vets kind of crack up, and they were laughing about her in a good way. And she was on her best behavior for everything, which was great. And, you know, we'll see how it is. So the way the shockwave works is we're going to do 3 treatments, 2 weeks in between. So she had her first one, so she'll be seen again in 2 more weeks, and then a final. And then we'll check to see what the inflammation looks like and what type of mobility and comfort she has. And, you know, if things look okay, we'll have some time for a nice pleasure career. And I'm not disappointed by that at all. Like I said, it's less pressure. I know I've talked about on the show, like my anxiety, a little bit of not feeling like we were far enough along. And now I kind of feel like I have the answer as to why we weren't getting where I thought we would be. And it's, she physically just could not. I would also like to stress, like, Astrid did come from new vocations. This was not something that would have been diagnosed at new vocations. Who knows if it even was showing at her time there. So I don't want anyone to feel discouraged. Like, they adapted, they aren't sure if like they would check for that. Their vets, they are very thorough. This most likely occurred years after. So we didn't even start seeing symptoms, if I could track it, till about 2-3 years ago. and that's when it would hit moderate. So
I would say it's not a thoroughbred thing either, right?
No, like, it is any horse.
So, and if anyone's listening and is like, well, I don't know, these thoroughbreds between the three horses they just mentioned, like, nope, this is just horses.
This is just horses. It can happen to any horse anytime. Actually, there's a lot of good research in neck injuries too. It's just kind of being more newly published in the last few years, but it's super common. It's super common. So if you're suspicious about your horse's behavior, if they suddenly feel reactive and or they're really great some days and not so great other days, and it's not your saddle, it's not the stifles, the legs, it's not ulcers, it might be worth just getting the neck checked out. Just saying. And hopefully it's not the situation either.
Right. Everything you did was like perfect, right? Like, you know, like you had a problem and you went to the vet. You didn't try to like go on the internet to diagnose it. You didn't try to train through it. You didn't try to, you know, do all the other things that we're all guilty of doing because we just don't want to either have the inconvenience or shell out, you know, the money to see the
or
vet.
Your it's, like, it's just worth it. Just, right.
You know,
Like her inability to be able to stay in a headset. I don't like saying that term, but that's the best way I can do it. You know, some people are quick to say like, well, just train her in side reins or, you know, put her in a martingale. And I would say just rule everything out before you bring out training aids, because it's not fair to the horse if there's a physical disability. And I'll be fair, I tried a martingale for 3 rides and it was actually some of the worst rides I've ever had. And now I know why. So again, not an end all be all. It'll eventually affect her quality of life. But for now, we're just going to see what we get over the next few weeks. I'm happy to provide some updates. She was very keen to go back outside and run around. So that was positive to see.
Yeah. Well, and like you and I had a good phone chat on our, on my way home. I think your vet came to you, which was nice. You know, we had a good chat about this, and someday maybe we'll sort of have that chat again as part of an episode, you know, about like just that weird, you know, we try to identify that, like that weird sense of relief at like having answers, even if it's not the outcome you wanted, you know, and that can be kind of some heavy stuff to grapple with. So we won't get into it now, but you know, it was a good phone call for both of us, you know?
Yeah.
That, like, we're both dealing with potentially terminal issues here, but like, you know, in some way there's kind of a peace in that, and that, you know, again, we won't get into it too much because it probably sounds a little strange to people who haven't been in that scenario, but you know, it is.
Yeah.
It is a thing.
It's a thing. And we'll definitely talk about it on another episode because I think it's an important one. It's a cathartic one to have. But for this episode, because I feel like we bummed y'all out a little bit, we're going to bring you right back up. It is actually a phenomenal episode. Again, we're recording this ahead of time, which means we've already talked to our guests. I can promise you, you are going to love this episode. We start with Nick Larkin, who one is just a wealth of knowledge. We're going to have him back, Kristen. To have him back.
We only got to like 25% of what we wanted to cover.
Yeah. Oh, I know. He's fantastic, but really cool, inclusive opportunity to hear about a new sport coming into the equestrian world. And then we introduce you to our Making the Makeover contestants, Chris and Jody. And oh my gosh, they cracked me up. I think I was laughing most of that interview. So while we might have started on the happiest tone, we think you're going to really enjoy this episode, and we're going to introduce you to a really cool horse, give you some great training tips. It's going to be the Retired Racehorse Radio that you know and love. But before we get started, we're going to hear from our premier sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products.
This nutritional minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. More and more horse owners are managing older horses. One of the best ways to care for the senior horse in your life is by prioritizing their digestive tract health. Older horses are less able to maintain a well-balanced microbiome and repair and replace damaged tissues. This can lead to an uptick in ulcers, colic, or free fecal water syndrome. Poor gastrointestinal health decreases the horse's ability to digest and absorb adequate nutrients. It also impacts the effectiveness of the immune system, leaving older horses less able to fight off diseases such as EPM. Adding a research-proven digestive supplement to your older horse's diet can help maintain a healthy GI tract and reduce the incidence of digestive issues. We recommend ProbioticWise to our customers with senior and geriatric horses. ProbioticWise contains the true probiotic Saccharomyces boulardii. Unlike other yeast-based probiotics, S. boulardii remains viable through the acid environment in the stomach. It supports the healing of damaged tissues, reduced inflammation, and the optimal digestion and absorption of nutrients. Furthermore, ProbioticWise contains fermentation metabolites that support a well-balanced microbiome. ProbioticWise is sold through your veterinarian, so ask your vet if ProbioticWise is right for your older horse. You can learn more about ProbioticWise at kppvet.com. Got questions about your feeding program? We can help. Email Karen at questions@kppusa.com or call us at 859-873-2974.
Well, such a treat to have our next guest, because it feels like having an equestrian celebrity on the air. We have Nick Larkin. If that name sounds familiar to you, it should. He is very accomplished, winning multiple inaugural Adelaide International Horse Trials, 3-star. He's been at Rolex 3-star and 4- or 5-star now. He's just crushing it out there. He's an avid thoroughbred lover, trainer, competing in eventing, show jumping, and dressage. And he has created a sport that I think all eventers have been longing to have, and that is cross-country equestrian. We're very excited to hear about it, but welcome to the show, Nick.
Hi.
It's great to have you. Tell us a little bit about Cross-Country Equestrian Association.
Well, we founded it here in Kentucky and launched it in the fall of last year. Its origins date back to sort of the late 90s when eventing was changing, and I had some ideas on which direction it might go. And it went in a different direction. Anyway, some of those ideas, I kind of kicked them around for a while and thought about different sports. And eventually, I suppose about 4 or 5 years ago, a couple of pieces that were missing kind of clicked into place. And then I knew I actually had something really good there. And so we put a bunch of work into it. And then, like I said, launched it just last year.
Amazing. And what I think this is exciting for eventers is it's kind of the thing that makes them want to event at the end of the day is getting that cross-country experience. I know there's more to eventing at the end of the day, but that's the thrill. That's the adrenaline rush. Like, I've never evented because I'm scared to death of it, but I love watching it. And it's always like that fist pump coming through, like when you see them have that clean round. And it's just like the sport hype of it all. And to have this kind of concentrated now, I think is going to be really exciting. What makes this a perfect sport for thoroughbreds?
Well, a perfect sport for thoroughbreds, it's got speed, stamina, you need jumping ability, you need sort of courage and heart. So all of that describes a thoroughbred. When you compare it to what eventing is now, You need the dressage from the training standpoint, like that's actually going to be really useful for you, but you don't need it in the competition. And that means you don't need fancy warm blood movement, nor do you need, you know, meter 40, meter 50 jumping scope, which you'll see in a lot of event horses these days. Mm-hmm. You'll actually have a cross-country horse. And I mean, if you just think about a cross-country horse from even if you look back at the origins of the sport of eventing, it being a military thing, you know, they were the smaller, faster, agile horses. They weren't the bigger, you know, fancy moving horses or anything like that, because that second group of horses, they were, you know, if you go back far enough, they were the ones that were pulling cannons or wagons full of something, not actually out there in the thick of the battle, so to speak.
So, Nick, I'm looking at the format and, you know, like from the name, you'd think like everyone just gets to go out and gallop cross country and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But that's not actually, that's not just what this sport is. So tell us a little bit about these components, you know, and these two phases that you've come up with.
Well, so, you know, it's going back to one of your earlier comments, you know, you're right. I mean, I think cross country is one of the most fun things that you can do with a horse. You know, I would say also that if you talk to people that used to do old format 3-day eventing when you had the steeplechase, and I was one of them, a lot of them would come off the steeplechase and say, okay, I really like cross country, but I'd trade doing another steeplechase because it's faster and it's more commitment. And so, you know, but it is, it's a, it's objective, so you're not worrying about, you know, whether a judge thinks it's good or not. You know, you're just like, if I get around this course and over the fences and so forth, and I'm going to do a good job. But, you know, where CCE differs from eventing or from the cross-country component of eventing, probably the two biggest things are the fact that instead of just trying to protect the dressage score and not add penalties or not incur penalties, in CCE, the main goal is that you go out there and score points for successfully jumping things. You certainly get penalties for making mistakes and having errors and everything, but the influence is much more from actually scoring the points. And then the second substantial, this is a huge thing, and this is actually one of the things that clicked into place, is that every single obstacle in the entire sport is optional. So you don't actually have to jump anything. You can literally, you know, start your course and go all the way around it and not jump a single thing. Now, your score will be zero, but you're still competing. So you mentioned a moment ago, like, oh, well, I like eventing, but I'm, you know, I'm worried about it or scared about it. And, I mean, this is on at one end of the scale. This is something that I'm trying to do with the sport is say, hey, come along and don't jump anything if you don't want to jump anything. And probably everybody would agree that what'll happen is they'll come along with somebody like that will come along and not plan to jump a single thing. And maybe they don't the first couple of times they're out there, but eventually they're going, well, I'm going to jump that little log, and then the next thing, and then the next thing, and then they're actually getting into it. But the sport actually allows you to start and go at your own pace, and there's no like pressure to jump anything on penalty of elimination, which is true of, you know, essentially every other sport. If you don't do the moves, if you don't go over the jump, you're going to get eliminated. And whereas this sport is sort of saying, I mean, you've got to work really hard to get eliminated in CCE. Because even if you're having a bad day, just only jump the small fences, or just jump another fence and just canter on home and finish on a score. It might not be a big score, but it's still a score. So, you know, that sort of comes back to the sport being about, you know, having more people participate. And then, like I've said, you can get into it very easily. You can progress at your own rate. And then, you know, when you're talking about people that are getting pretty serious about it, they're going to be going out there and figuring out, okay, how am I going to rack up a good score? And, you know, and that is not going to be, particularly at the higher levels, that is not going to be just jump everything that's out there. You're actually going to start making tactical choices as to which jumps you do jump and which jumps you pass, because sometimes you'll go, okay, this fence here is going to slow me down to the point where it's going to affect my time. And instead, I'm going to pass this one, keep my speed up, keep a little extra energy in the tank to go to this other fence, which is going to score more points or, you know, be faster for me to get through. So there's all these sort of tactical things that sort of come in, particularly at the higher levels and the higher levels of, or higher classes of competition.
Oh, that's fascinating. So it's like almost like a little bit of like gambler's choice in a way.
Yeah. Some people have sort of compared that, other than the fact that you have your course and, you know, everything's
right,
numbered 1, 2, 3, 4. And you go round and you basically every single jump, you just pick, do I jump it or do I not jump it? And there's rules, depending on the type of jump, there's rules as to the number of attempts you're allowed at it before you have a mandatory pass. And there are, you know, I mentioned the scoring, and if you've looked on the website at all or read a little bit about it, regular fences score a certain amount of points, and then challenge fences, which are generally, you can kind of think of those as being a fence of the next higher level. So they might be a little bit bigger or a little bit more technically difficult, and they score more points. And some of the formats, and I know we haven't really talked about that, but in some of the formats, you've got some show jumping type fences, and then you'll have, in the majority, you'll have cross-country type fences, and cross-country type fences score more than show jumping type fences.
This is fascinating. And it sounds like such a friendly way for the scaredy cats like myself to try something new with our horses in like a really safe and approachable way. No, I think it's really cool.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a huge part about it. It's actually very, very welcoming, and you can go at your own pace, picking and choosing what you want to do. Of course, you know, there's qualification and eligibility rules. So, you know, at the very low level, you're not going to need to qualify. As you go up, you're going to need to start proving that, okay, you're competent at that level, you're safe at that level. But even then, you know, you bump up a level, you might go, well, I'm going to jump most of the regular fences and maybe none of the challenge fences. And I'm just going to just have a good first round at that new level. And then, you know, you come back the next week or the next month or whatever, and you do a little bit more. And so, you know, you get to go at your pace, at your horse's pace. And then too, as I mentioned before, if you're having a, maybe you say, oh, you know what, I will jump that challenge fence, or I'll jump a couple more fences. And if you're not having such a good day, just back off and start passing more of the jumps.
One, I want to applaud you that there needs to be a qualification before going to that next level, because I do think until you're in those more like those top levels, the exposed levels, there's a lot of people at lower levels who put themselves like, but they're not ready for novice. They're really beginner novice, but they want to be novice, but they're really not qualified, or their horse isn't ready. And then they set themselves up for not the best ride and then get mad about it. I personally have seen it even just in dressage alone, where someone's not ready for a level and they sign up anyway and walk away frustrated or angry at their horse. And I just want to applaud you that before they can move up, there is something that they have to prove before they can get there. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. The qualification system's actually, it's got some kind of neat and innovative structures in it. There's like, you know, when you bump up a level, you get a rank of beginner, and until you've posted three qualifying scores, which are, I can explain that if you want, but until you've posted three scores that show that you belong there, you're going to stay at that rank, and that also creates this sort of little probationary period where you have at the most three attempts to do that. And if you don't, you actually have a mandatory relegation, and then you have to actually re-qualify at the lower level. So a lot of the rules and how it's structured is rather than sort of trying to police bad outcomes, it's more the rules encourage you to make good choices. And, should I level up now or class up now? Or, and, you know, sometimes you'll class up or level up and you'll go, okay, this is harder than I thought. Well, you can drop back down but if you still keep whacking at it and you're not successful, then the sport will say, no, you've got to go back down. And because you didn't do it earlier, by making a good choice, now you're going to actually have to requalify at that lower level. So, like I said, rules that sort of encourage the right sort of behavior, so you're not having to run around and tell people off. And
protect the horse, you know, too,
right,
at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that I've done with this right from the get-go. It's like, it's very, very horse-centric. It's not about, I mean, this is a term that I've heard recently and I've sort of co-opted it, but it's not about a horse being a piece of, procurable or replaceable equipment. It's more like the sport, actually, you need to be more of a team rather than just, okay, well, I've got this new horse that can do X, Y, Z now, so I can go and do this. It's like the sport itself is asking, because the sort of the levels of technicality that are in it and the little features that are not in eventing but are in the sport, that basically if you don't really know your horse, you're going to have not a bad time, but you're going to have a tougher time getting around the course. And the idea is if that is the case, you then go, you know what, I got to get better. I've got to get more control, more responsivity from my horse, more adjustability, whatever it is. The sport will sort of like point out the weaknesses in your team, whether that's the rider or the horse or both of you, or you don't understand each other well enough. And so then you'll know what the problem is, and then also go home and work on it and get better before you go back out there.
I love that. I think that really encompasses what being an equestrian really is about at the end of the day, is that partnership. I would love to learn a little bit about the Horsemanship Award, because I feel like that is also inspired by everything you just said about going in as partners at the end of the day. But tell us about the Horsemanship Award through CCEA. Okay.
So as of now, the Horsemanship Award is the only award that actually goes to a person, because going back to keeping the horse at the center, if you and your horse win, say a level or a division in a level, the winner is the horse ridden by, you know, Sally, whoever. And but the Horsemanship Award is the award that goes to the person that just sort of showed or best represented the values of the sport. So, and it's open to anybody at the competition that is a member of the CCEA. So it could be an official or an organizer or a volunteer or a supporter or a rider, or it could be the parent of a rider that is a member themselves. You know, so far it has gone to people that have sort of helped out other people or been particularly sportsmanlike about something or just picked up on something that's gone on and done something sort of over and above. And it's just sort of like, it might be a little bit cheesy in a way, but it's sort of trying to remind people what we're here for, which is, you know, having fun with horses as opposed to going out there and winning and winning and winning all the time. I mean, just flipping to a different thing here, our prize money structure is quite flat, so that if you win, because your horse probably doesn't really care about the money or whatever, that first place is not going to get much more than 10th place. And you know, the idea is, yeah, sure, you might win get the trophy there because the ribbon or whatever it happens to be. But the idea is that it's dispersed more evenly across the people that are there. So, yeah, I mean, the Horsemanship Award is really just sort of saying, hey, good job, you're representing the values of the sport there, and it is voted on by the people that are there. Like, people can nominate people for it and vote on it, and it's voted on by the participants and the people that are there.
I love it. It reminds me a little bit. I don't know if you're familiar with equine trail sports, but that's like a.
Only a little, the pool noodles and all the rest, yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, you know, so I've done one of those events, and it reminds me a lot of how, you know, your cross-country, you know, like that long-form cross-country is set up, that, you know, you have the option to take every obstacle at the level that you feel best suits your horse. You're not locked into doing it in a particular way. And I like that kind of, you know, horsemanship-y approach. Yeah. And in a very similar vein, the judges can award their own special shout-outs at every obstacle for a combination that they thought, you know, tackled it well or tactfully or made a good decision. It wasn't necessarily like, oh, they did it the best, but they did something that caught the judge's eye in a good way. And that's kind of what this Horsemanship Award feels like, you know, of like somebody who did something cool but didn't necessarily win but deserves to be recognized. So I like that.
Yeah.
It's very, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then another part sort of that kind of relates not so much to the award, but just to the idea behind it, is that so far with the workshops, because we're teaching everybody, we have to do a briefing and a course walk and everything. But the idea is that the sport actually has a briefing at every competition, and that attendance is sort of mandatory. we're not going to really, really enforce that. But I want to try and develop this culture of people that are there doing this, you know, having fun with their horses and are actually supporting each other. And the briefing will be informative from the point of view of, they'll be saying, okay, this group of obstacles here, it's going to be judged this way, so don't think about doing this sort of weird cheaty move or something like that. Or, you know, we're concerned about the footing in this little area here, so, you know, keep an eye on that. Just, you know, giving people information. But it's also a place where over time, I'm hoping that there'll be sort of a little tradition, whether it's some sort of like catchphrase or something, but it's just reminding people what we're all here for, as opposed to getting too hung up on the competition of it and trying to win. I mean, everybody just should be going out there trying to do their best. And if they win, well, fantastic. But if they're way down, but they had a great ride, that's also fantastic.
Yeah, I like this a lot. So like my last question, it's not really a question so much as just, I guess, a comment or an observation, but like this whole sport is really built on the horsemanship factor and the, you know, development and learning. And I will admit that like, I didn't pursue it very, I'm a Western rider, so I didn't look super close at it. I've gone cross country schooling. I had a ball. I'm not yet tempted to go out and get into the sport, but I had a really good time. But, you know, from reading like the headlines and seeing, you know, press releases and stuff about this, I made the assumption that like, oh, this is just for eventers who don't want to do the dressage and they just want to go and gallop and like be gritty and go balls to the wall and do all the crazy stuff. But like the longer we're talking, the more I'm realizing like, that is not what this sport is about. Like, yes, you can still do all that fun stuff, but this is really like the horsemanship foundation. So I'm so glad that we got to talk about this because I admit I was super ignorant. And I assume that if I'm super ignorant about something, there's probably other people on the internet.
I was raising my hand with that too, Kristen.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I apologize for making that assumption. I'm so glad we talked about this, but yeah, I think this is such a cool sport that's really getting to the heart of what horse sport is supposed to be, which is the partnership with the horse. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, just on that, you know, I actually think that this sport will be safer because you're going to actually need more control to actually do something, or you know, to jump fences. But one other thing, you know, it's on the horsemanship. It's also about accessibility, and sometimes that's related to, you know, the cost of it or the type of horse you need or equipment. Sometimes it's related to the number of days you're spending to do a competition.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, people are really happy to be able to put their horse on a trailer, drive somewhere, compete, and then go home on the same day, because that keeps it more affordable for them. And, and it also gives them the other day of their weekend to be with their family or do something else or whatever. And sure, some of the bigger competitions, the bigger classes, they do run multiple days, but it's not, you know, show after show after show. Hey, you're going to need 3 or 4 days to do this thing, because, you know, just most people can't do that. And then another part of it is that, you know, and very briefly mentioned that there are formats there. The idea is that with this numerous formats that you could actually run in the sport is that whatever venue it happens to be, whether it's something that's got very limited cross country, like it might be a little, you could have something that looks a lot more like, say, a little Hunter Derby course, which is heavy on the show jumping and it's just got a little bit of cross country tacked into it. That would fall under a format called jump off ride. Another one might be much more like a hunter pace or a trail ride, and that would fall into another sort of format called the endurance cross ride. And then another place might just have cross country, but no show jumps, and that would be more of the cross country ride. So this means that the sport itself can be, you know, hosted at far more venues rather than eventing could, for example, because,
yeah, for sure,
you know, if you're going to do an event, you've got to have your dressage arenas, then you've got to have your show jumping jumps and arenas, and then you've got to have this cross country course. You've got to be able to run all of that. Whereas if you've got a venue that only has one of those things, you can run CCE, you know?
Then you don't need to have to school all the stamina either, you know, like miles and miles of cross country too. So that makes it more accessible as well for people who don't.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the idea is that instead of like, if you think of an eventer, like if you're getting ready for an event, you would go do some dressage shows and you'd have your dressage lessons. And then you'd probably do some jumper shows and have your jumping lessons. And then you'd probably cross country school. And then you'd probably do some fitness. And the idea of this is that, and you can actually participate in the sport and do all of those things. So, and then you've got this variety out there rather than going to, you know, the same sort of competition at different venues. And there's always going to be sort of a clear winner, which is just the one generally that has more resources. This lets each venue put on the best CCE competition that they can put on, which will be different to the best CCE competition that a different that another venue can put on. So you get all this variety, and something, I've said this before, something in South Texas will have a different flavor to something in Massachusetts or Connecticut. Like in South Texas, we're getting talk from people actually just recently. There's a trail riding group that is really they've heard about this, and they're like really interested. And they want to come out and have a look at how they might be able to have their riders start joining in and doing some EXR, that's the endurance cross ride type thing, and then merging into some of the cross country ride side of it as well. So it's it's got all this flexibility that allows it to grow in different areas and in different ways. And that's actually a feature rather than a bug.
I have learned so much today, Nick.
This has been really cool.
This has been amazing. I'm very excited about it. I know we're at time, but I feel like we could bring you on for a second episode just to learn even more about how the
we never talked about
works.
The thoroughbreds.
I know. We definitely need to have, we'll you, have back you back on for training tips and all that good stuff.
Well, you know, just to fill in that last little part, I mean, at one point on this path of developing the sport, I was actually thinking about a thoroughbreds only sport that was held at race courses, because I was looking at race courses and going, they have everything, location, all the facilities and infield, stabling, parking, restaurants, grandstand. And I'm like, and they're empty and they're not being used. And I was just like, this is nuts. Why aren't we using these things for a sport where these horses, you know, used to be? And that's still actually part of CCE. There's a format that can be converted to the race course type situation. But you know, going back to what I said earlier on, it takes speed and it takes stamina and it takes jumping ability, not crazy scope, but good jumping ability and that quick thinking mind of the thoroughbred. So that's why it's, you know, I have no doubt that at every level the thoroughbreds will exceed, will do really, really well. But at every level too, you know, I'm totally cool with warm bloods or draft horses or even mules coming in and competing. I mean, if they're good at it, there's no reason why they can't be there.
Absolutely. It definitely feels like it's friendly for everyone. And for anyone who wants to get involved or even host one of these workshops and eventually a competition, how do you recommend them to get in touch?
Just get in touch via the website. There's a contact form there. And if that's what people have been doing, just get in touch and let us know that if they're interested. And what we've been saying to people too, is if you want it in your area, the first thing to do is talk to your friends, talk to your riding friends, and you know, talk to people that do have venues or you know, or organizers and so forth, because the organizers generally they always want to know, if I put on something new like this, are people going to show up? Mm-hmm. And so if a bunch of, you know, riders are saying, we like this idea, can you put something on? Well, then we'll show up and help them get it started. What we've been doing with the workshops is we try to find a venue that more or less has the capacity to run an event, because then we mm-hmm. can show all the different aspects of the sport, but then also have other organizers, say the local organizers that maybe are more, you know, have limited facilities or a smaller venue or something, come and as part of the workshop, we can discuss CCE for your specific situation. So, you know, they can get their head around, okay, this is how I can implement it. And after attending, I mean, generally after attending one, at the most two workshops, people are kind of like, yeah, I got this. I understand the basics of the sport and I know how to run it. And, you know, I'm busy working on some guidebooks and everything that help organizers and get going on this, but they're able to get up and get running.
Amazing. Well, I'm selfishly going to be in touch, as our barn has the Michigan Eventing Association leader as our head trainer. So I know she's interested in this too. So I'll be in touch with you separately, Nick. But thank you so much for joining. And we really appreciate this breakdown and super excited to see this take off. For all our listeners interested, go ahead, check it out. It's crosscountryequestrianassociation.com. As Nick said, if this is of interest to you, talk to your trainers, talk to your barn friends, start spreading the word. It seems like it's going to be a really cool and inclusive event for anyone and everyone. And Nick, thanks again. We really appreciate it and best of luck.
You're welcome. Thanks very much.
Cashel has been crafting top-notch products since 1986, designed to make your ride safer, more convenient, and downright enjoyable. From the Crusader Fly Mask, the ultimate fly mask, trusted by riders nationwide, to the Blanket Top Performance Felt Pad with pressed felt with merino fleece. It's like a spa day for your horse's back. To the beautiful beaded halters, adjustable, durable, and gorgeous. Visit CashelCompany.com today and gear up for the ride of a lifetime. Cashel, where quality meets the saddle. Well, Joy, we are very excited to be back with our second half of our introductions of Making the Makeover. This is just such a fun series that we do to get to know some makeover trainers and their horses and the struggles of their journey better every year. And our second half, we're really excited to have two makeover veterans, but also two podcast veterans. So we are joined by apparently now repeat guests, Jody Bush and Chris Benning. So Jody and Chris, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I am super excited. I'm going to start with Jody because, of course, I am always excited when there's another Western Thoroughbred rider out there. And Jody and I like super geeked out like many episodes ago about Bozzles. So I'm very excited to have you, you know, representing the Western disciplines, but of course, like that nice vaquero tradition that you do so well. You were such an inspiration when I first met you at the 2018 makeover. So I'm going to fangirl now and be like, Jody's back. Yay. So Jody, welcome back. Tell us a little bit about your makeover horse, if you have one selected for this year.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for saying those nice things about the vaquero stuff, because I think I'll probably talk lots about it over this series. We've got four prospects on the go right now, and not a one of them has been ridden in a bit yet. We're riding them all in hackmores, which is like a fun challenge in many ways, but also I think just so good for them. They're really coming along well. They're all mares. So I don't know if you want to hear.
I do. Every Team Mare. One of them. I'm here for it.
Yeah. So we've got Sparrow, Surprise, Smarty, and Alira. And they're Sparrow's an Alberta bred mare. Surprise is Manitoba bred. So we have a couple Canadian horses. Then we've got Union Smarty. She's California bred. And Musical Reload is from Kentucky. They all raced here in Canada, though, and came off the track in Canada. So super excited for all of them. And like, yeah, so far, so good. It's been really fun.
Yeah, we like skipped right over the like introduce where you're from part. So yeah, we have an international-ish flair this year, Jody. You are from Saskatchewan. So yeah, tell us a little bit about where you're from and how cold it may or may not be up there right now.
Oh, well, it's not so bad right now. It stayed cold late this year. Saskatchewan, Canada, which is right in the middle of Canada. And we're right in Saskatoon, in the middle of Saskatchewan. Minus 30 in the winter is kind of our common low temperature. Right now it's, you know, just above freezing. Everything's melting. It's, muddy and icy and just kind of that fun horse time of year, I guess.
Everyone's dirty and you can't ride anywhere. Yeah.
I'm familiar.
Well, it's snowing here in New York, so I'd like to feel like, you know, solidarity with you. So.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. We're getting all the snow should be gone, I would say, by the weekend. And then, yeah, out in the mud puddles.
Right. Yeah. You just trade one problem for another one, but that's all right. So are you planning to bring all four, or you have to narrow down to a few?
So between my assistant trainer and I, we're both accepted for two horses each. So right now we just have all four that we're just kind of riding interchangeably, with the idea that kind of come summertime, the horses will tell us who they like best, and we'll kind of start to narrow down who gets to take which horses. And then after that, we'll narrow down what disciplines the horses think they want to do.
Yeah, because you have experience in multiple disciplines at the makeover, right? Like, you know, I shout you out as a ranch work person, but I mean, you've done a lot of things.
Yeah, I've done ranch and freestyle are the two that I've done both times at the makeover. Okay. Competitive trail would be my natural fit. That's what probably I do most often. And also I compete in cowboy dressage. So those would be the other two that I might lean towards. I'm certainly not going to do polo, but I think everything else is kind of a potential possibility, I guess.
Yeah, a good, well-rounded horseman. I love it. Yeah. I just want to shout out your line that you're going to see who the horses like best and not who you and your trainer like best. I think that's a lovely horse forward way of looking at it. So thank you for that.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Well, I will make sure that all the English people are represented equally here, and I will fangirl over Chris Bennings. So Chris, tell us a little bit about one, where are you located? I guess how your weather is.
You guys just set me up for failure because she's negative 30 riding in hackamores and, you know, oh, Chris, where are you from? You know,
listen, Jody, you had a tornado yesterday. So.
Yeah, you survived like something terrifying as a horse person.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. I don't want to do it again, but we're okay.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about your makeover prospect.
So we're in Paris, Kentucky, so not far from the horse park. So the weather right now, we think it's cold. It's not negative 30, but I had hail today, so I wanted to crawl back into bed.
I take the negative 30 over the hail, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I don't like to be pelted with rocks. So
no, I'm good.
Good point. So this year, I have a horse called Quana Dude. He's a 7-year-old gelding. He's about 16-1. We bought him. He's Florida bred. We bought him out of Louisiana from a friend, Jade Favre. She had a really neat horse that I wanted to buy. It was a gray horse, and then they decided to send it back to the track. So I kind of panicked for a minute, and we bought this guy, and he's just a ton of fun.
I love that. You were kind enough to send over a photo, which we'll make sure to put into our social media. But he just has like a big expressive eye. Like, I feel like he matches your personality a little bit. Am I wrong there?
You guys are going to be really disappointed. He's quite boring. He's really well behaved.
Is he really?
Yes.
He looks like he's going to, I wonder if he's going to like outsmart you at some point. I wonder if he's setting you up.
No, I don't think he's got it in him. I got to be honest. I might have an easy one this year.
Wow. I mean, it works well because I know you traditionally do the hunter jumper. So in some ways, that's a good thing in the hunter ring. He does look like he could be a prankster, though, so I'm surprised. I'm wondering how it'll turn out. We might have to do a wager between
each other. Well, I think with most of them, if they spend enough time with me, eventually the marbles fall and they get a little goofy. So it could be
fun.
Well,
you said it first. So now I don't feel bad that I had that thought without saying it out loud because you said it. So
if you go around the whole farm, like nobody is normal around here. So I've got time to corrupt this one, I think.
All right. Well, I would say just adding your own personal flair, but that's fine. Language is language.
It's just semantics at this point. Yeah. So that's great.
Right.
So are you anticipating hunter jumpers or are you open to other disciplines with him?
I am actually, we got him. I'm going to attempt with my best foot forward. We're going to try some dressage and freestyle.
Fun. Ooh. Mixing it up.
Yeah, I'm going to like run down the list, I think. And Celia, my wife, she has a lovely hunter. We had two horses that we were trying to pick from, and he was really, really nice. But she usually gets the really crazy ones that I won't ride. So I thought you can have a nice, easy one. And they both ended up being really good boys.
Well, we need to talk to Celia at some point about how she ended up with that gig.
I thought you were going to say how she ended up with Chris.
Well, that's kind of the same gig, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think you need to hear her perspective.
Okay, so Jody's like a few disciplines ahead of you, I think, or at least could be. But so are you aiming to do like the first makeover sweep and do all 10 at some point?
I want to be Mr. Makeover.
Oh, interesting. Okay. We'll have to start that as like a punch card thing. you know, and like
I know it's like who's your 10th discipline first?
Is free or something.
Yeah. I want to see you two in t-shirts.
I will get you a sash. That will be my gift to you, Chris, is I'll get you a sash.
Ah, perfect.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I wanted to try something a little bit different. The hunters and jumpers, that's kind of my normal, you know, that's what I do all day, every day. And I wanted to try something a little bit different. And I thought that was a safe next step for me. I think anything else, I might be in trouble.
Yeah, you're still contained in a ring. So, mm-hmm. you know, like you've correct. Got some walls yeah. around you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the basis, you know, around, you know, there's some rules where, you know, I can be a little bit contained and not, well, the freestyle, you know, you never know.
Well, yeah, the freestyle, there's rules, but there's also no rules. So, yeah.
That's my life.
So now do you find that, like, you know, the show hunter transitions well to the field hunter, or have you not ventured into field hunter land before?
I like jumping stuff that falls down. So okay, the eventing and field hunter, I'm not sure I want to run, like, you know, head first into something that has come down naturally. You know, I like it when it rolls off the cups and things. So I don't know. I might have to do that next year.
That's fair. Yeah. Our previous interview, we admitted to Nick Larkin that we don't really like to jump cross country ourselves. So, no. You know, we're in solidarity.
Although,
we're with you.
Maybe, Chris, when you listen to this episode in the future, you should listen to that whole opportunity with the cross country association.
Yeah, that's a good point, well, actually. That'd be a good commercial for that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I find when I talk to cross country people, when they do things that scare me, I think, like, I should probably not go into that.
This one's a more inclusive friendly. Like, there's
horsemanship first. Yeah. We'll strap a camera to your head. First. We'll send you out there. It'll be great. It'll be fun.
And the fact that you can compete and not jump anything was like a win for me.
All right. I might be ready for that.
We can go.
Training wheels.
Cross country weaning. Oh, we meet the training wheels team. We'll be good.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I know, you know, we talked a little bit when we were, you know, talking about Prince of New York, and, you know, we talked about this some with Mission Canyon when we had you on last, but at this stage of the process, you know, it's just early April. What are you doing with your makeover horses at this stage of the year?
Not much.
Great. Fine.
Yeah.
You know what? I really like to give them the winter off because I feel like it's cold and I don't want to be outside. So they probably don't want to work either. And it's a good time, you know, for us in Kentucky. The weather's really not that bad. So if they get a few months where they can just be horses, do that kind of thing. And then right now, this is a hard time for us. You know, I've ridden him a few times and he's such a good boy. So I'm not in a total panic about it. But right now, you know, we're foaling, we're breeding, we're trying to get the farm back in order. And it's just Celia and myself. So it's a little bit overwhelming. So, you know, kind of the biggest obstacle we have is motivation. So, you know, after I play with horses all day long, to go tack up and ride one that I'm not getting paid for is kind of hard. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I look out my kitchen window and the foals are doing something cute. So I have to go out and take a picture, or, you know, they're laying down trying to sleep. So I feel like that's a good time to tackle them and show them how much I love them, while they try and run away. And, you know, so it's that kind of thing. So it's really, you know, I've done some in-hand work with them and just kind of, you know, tried to let him be a horse and have some downtime. And then, you know, just knowing how intense the training gets, you know, as the weather gets better. But we're really lucky in Kentucky. I think the temperatures are great and things like that. So I don't really do much in the wintertime.
So what would you say to people who feel like they might be behind at this point because they haven't been, you know, schooling mm-hmm. down in Florida or Aiken all winter?
You're going to feel behind until like the first week of October. So don't panic. I literally bought this horse because the one I wanted, I couldn't buy. So I was like, I need to buy something, you know, and I was panicking. This was like back in December. You know, I'm like, I don't have a horse yet. And then it started snowing and I'm like, I don't want to go outside. So I think there's always this time crunch where you feel like you need to be at a certain point. And, both of the horses that I've won with, I always felt behind, and neither one of them, Prince of New York, he showed one time before we went, and Mission Canyon that I rode last year, I tried to take him to a schooling show right before the makeover, and it was an absolute disaster just on schooling day. And I went back and I was like, all right, I've got 2 weeks. I got to figure this out. And then I just kind of changed his program a little bit. So I don't feel like now you need to be at horse shows and doing all this sorts of thing. Like, take the time, get to know your horse, just start your training process. And, you know, when you get to the makeover in October, like, just have fun. You know, it's either going to fall into place or it's not. And it's literally the first step. Like, it's not a big deal. So I don't panic much until I do, but by then it's too late.
Yeah. Then it's just fun. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. So Jody, how about you? What are you normally doing with your horses, or what are you doing now with your horses in early April?
Well, it's a lot of foundational stuff. I think if I could say one negative thing about thoroughbreds, they love to be fidgety. So these girls have spent a lot of time just like tied to posts while I ride other horses, just kind of learning to stand still and relax. Because I really want them to be able to relax. They're going to have to go on a huge trip and they're going to be at that big show, and I just want them to be able to chill out. So that's a big, big priority, is that sort of like foundational groundwork stuff where they just like put their head down and chill out. And then we've been doing like quite a circling program. We're stuck in this small indoor arena in the winter here. So a lot of like, do you understand how to stay on a circle? And do you understand how to not kind of lean on the hackamore? And all of that stuff, I think it's very slow going. But now that we're able to be outside and do a little more, I think they're kind of ready to go with their training. Whereas when they first came, they'd kind of want to run you over and fidget around. So they're just kind of ready. They're just ready to go. I think they're all in the headspace of like, now they're ready to start the like proper training.
Yeah. Because you did all that work, right? Like, it's hard to, in the moment, you're like, God, this is boring, you know, or like,
yeah,
we're not progressing, we're not doing anything. But that, it's good for me to hear too, because I spent a lot of the winter being like, you're going to get tied inside by yourself. And I was like, is this training? This doesn't feel like training. This doesn't feel like I'm doing enough, you know, but it is such critical work and you just don't see a lot of day-to-day progress. And then you're like, oh, this was really useful when you get to the fun riding part. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. You just need
the big, I don't know, the metaphor I always use and tell my students and tell people is the wider your base, the taller your pyramid. So we're trying to get the base really wide so we can build it tall.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to needlepoint that on a pillow or something, but I'll make sure to credit you too. So don't worry.
I stole it from someone for sure. So don't credit me. I don't know who I stole it from, but
Jody Bush, parentheses, someone else.
Someone else. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome though. That makes so much sense. And I think like that kind of groundwork, right? Like I think we all want to do active groundwork, right? Where you think like you're doing something and you're interacting with the horse. But I think a lot of that, like, kind of self-led groundwork, you know, of like the horse learning to stand tied, that stuff is so critical. And we all tend to overlook it and want to do something more interactive because it makes us feel like we're doing something and progressing. So that's super.
Yeah, that, and the multitasking too. When you have, you know, a few horses, if you can, you know, tie one up or teach it to ground tie while you ride, that's something I try to do is have a horse standing in the arena while I ride another horse. If they can stand still and ground tie while you lope circles around them on another horse, you know they understand to stand still. That's a good one.
Okay, that's next level for sure. I would end up like just chasing the ground tied horses. It's wandering off all day. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, if they run off, you just rope them, which is also fun, but geez, can get a little Western.
Yeah, I'll leave that part to you, I think. That sounds good though. Yeah, we need to get you a GoPro, I think. Like a Retired Resource Radio sponsored GoPro so we can see what you see. That sounds cool.
Well, they don't stand still for that yet, but If I get that working, we'll get a video. We will.
Yeah. Oh my God, that'd be amazing. So yeah, so same question as we asked Chris, what advice would you give to trainers who feel like they are behind in April?
Oh my gosh, I think I have the same answer as Chris, which is you'll feel like you're behind the whole time. Probably if you think you're right on track, you're missing something. But the makeover, it's such an interesting thing because everyone's kind of at a different place and you're just going to go there and have so much fun, regardless of how your horse behaves. If it's a gong show, it will be so much fun. And if your horse is perfect, it will be so much fun. So I wouldn't even hardly worry about what the horse is doing right now. And just know that it's going to be super fun.
I love it. Well, and we always say like, oh, the makeover, but really this applies to anyone with like a major training goal at any point, you know, in their journey, whether it's a big horse show or, you know, they want to reach X level by June, you know, like that applies to everybody, not just the makeover people. So
love Absolutely. It. Well, and being our two veterans, our others, our first timers coming, I'll start with you, Jody. If you had one word of advice, like coming into this makeover as a veteran again, what would be your advice going into it for anyone who might be coming for their first time?
I think my advice would be to get your horse out and about as much as possible, because no matter how many shows you've been to, this is a big, big show. And I don't think it's just because I'm coming from, you know, the middle of nowhere in Canada. It's a big show and it's a big atmosphere. And I think that's where the horses struggle the most. So if you can get your horse out to busy places and just get them good at traveling and being in chaos and make sure they'll still, you know, behave themselves when things are going a little bit wild, I think that's the best thing you could do to prepare. That's my number one piece of advice.
I love that. And how about you, Chris? Same thing for the first timer going to the makeover. What do you recommend for them to keep in mind?
I really agree with Jody on that, you know, I've won it a couple times and I've lost it a bunch. And I learned along the way that you have no idea what is going to happen at the horse park. One of the years they were doing a driving championship and I cantered across the diagonal line and here comes four Frisians in the most beautiful carriage. And I was like, oh, look at that. And I'm like, oh no, wait, you're jumping, pay attention. you think it's just a horse show. There's also other horse shows going on. I brought one horse one year, from Florida and realized he didn't see a hill until he got to the horse park. And, then when I had the stallion, my big thing was I just needed to teach him to pay attention to me and just be really comfortable hanging out with me. So the last 2 years when my horses did well in the finals, you know, on schooling day, I hand walked them in the ring and I, you know, sometimes feel a little bit lazy as I'm watching everyone else schooling. And I just walk around the outside of the ring, you know, just looking at the signs and hanging out. And I found that to be really successful. If you can get to a stressful place that there's a lot going on, there's some horses behaving, some are not. If you can just teach your horse, just kind of hang out with you and just, you know, stay in tune with you and take a breath and take it all in, but also, you know, be able to look to you as the rider and the handler and say, okay, it's not that scary. And that's not important to me. What's important is, you know, horse rider relationship. Then your training, I think, can actually come out. You just see so many horses that have a meltdown because they're just not understanding what's going on. And I think that's where the issue, that then you see the horses that kind of just go, all right, you know, that horse is loose. That's fine. I'm not, you know, we're just going to hang out here. And then they're, you know, everything works out okay.
Yeah, I have been like similarly humbled in the past show season by like, oh, my horse is now relies more on his buddy than on me. Mm-hmm. So that's such good advice of like, get your relationship right. You know, so that was a fun lesson to learn, but we've been trying to do that over the winter. So yeah, it's not done over the makeover either. Like, you know, there's plenty of years after the makeover to continue to screw it up and try to fix it again. So I love it. All right. Well, Chris, where can people follow your makeover journey on the internet?
Oh, now I have to get proactive. It'll probably be on my Facebook page, and Celia, she tends to post more than I do, but I'll try and be a little better at it.
So yeah, you're going to be like podcast famous Facebook. Now. So yeah. Yeah. You got to hop to it.
Yeah. I'm just not very good at it. That's bad.
That's okay. Well, you can have your home on the internet for the makeover can be this podcast. So that's fine.
Yeah. That's what I have you girls for. You're like, hey, get it together.
Be like, Chris, the calendar says you should be posting an update today. Come on. So yeah.
That's correct. Good. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Jody, how about you? Where can listeners follow along with your makeover journey?
I've got a Good Start OTTB training on Facebook. And from there, you can also find an Instagram page. We are making a very concerted effort to post lots of stuff for these four mares on Facebook so people can follow along. No promises, because I've been poor about it in the past as well, but we're going to do our best. So hopefully there'll be lots of good stuff out there.
Four mares. I love this. You're like team mare. You guys are just going to like roll in from Canada with all these
like mares. A boss. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
All oh my four gosh. Of them.
Okay. I want you to like be in your trailer and be like, get in losers, like a real mean girls.
Oh my God. Yeah. Roll up. Get in losers for going to the makeover. Except they're winners. They're all winners. But
that's
yeah, that would be
a Facebook reel for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Welcome. We really believe it. Everything Thank is you. Content. Yeah. That yes. theme will never die.
All right. I have one last question. Jody and Chris, have you guys ever crossed paths at the makeover? Like, you're both makeover veterans, but have you like hung out before?
No, she's way too organized for me.
She's everyone is much more put together than you. It's fine.
I don't think I'm very organized, but
I don't know.
Okay, well, Chris already told us that he lives local, so we'll have the after party at his house. So
yeah,
hang out then. Yeah,
I'm excited.
I love it. All right, well, we're gonna have a really fun season following you guys and cheering you on. So thank you very much for joining us again for Make the Makeover. We'll see you again next time.
Thank you.
Awesome. Bye.
Equine Network offers an assortment of equestrian programs and services to grow your horsemanship skills in and out of the saddle. One of those programs is Equestrian Plus, which offers world-class training at your fingertips. Hear a little bit more about them now.
Recharge your training program with Equestrian Plus. Equestrian Plus brings together top riders, trainers, and professionals onto one video platform. Watch over 5,000 how-to training videos, clinic and event footage, exclusive training sessions, and more featuring top experts including 5-time dressage Olympian Stefan Peters, 5-time Olympic show jumper Ann Krasinski, Olympic eventer and silver medalist William Fox Pitt, and more. Join Equestrian Plus now and use promo code HRN15 for 15% off your first month. Visit EquestrianPlusPLUS.com to subscribe.
It is that time of the show where we have new vocations join us. And this week we have Winnie Morgan Nemeth, who is going to talk about some standardbred things with us today. Welcome back, Winnie.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. It is definitely an exciting time as we're entering spring. I know new vocations did a big push for some discounts with adoption as we're getting close to really every horse person's favorite time of the year, springtime, coming into summer. It's where we all come out of our houses and take off all of our snow pants. Like, we're ready. We're ready to be with our horses again. So, and that also means everyone's getting excited for training again. And Kristen, I know you had a training question for Winnie.
Yeah. And actually, this one was fun because we talked about this some off air first to kind of figure out the direction we were going, because, you know, I was chatting with a couple of friends who also are transitioning some standardbreds and they have some new to them horses. And we all felt like we had like a similar issue in, you know, trying to transition these horses into basically the confines of equestrian space. So like riding them in rings and small pens. And like, I have a little bit of an advantage in that I do a lot of my riding out in the pasture. So it's a a great big space, you know, sweeping turns. And I started thinking about this because I used to drive Percherons with my family. And we noticed too, you know, we'd have these horses pretty road fit because that's where we did a lot of our training, because where else are you going to fit, you know, a Percheron team in a wagon? We would just, you know, bum around the roads in the neighborhood, and then we'd get these horses into the show ring and they'd be dropping that inside shoulder in those tight turns. So, you know, my friends and I, with all the wisdom of people who should probably know better, we were like, it must be a driving horse problem. And then the more we talked about it, the more we thought, actually, this might not be a driving horse problem. This might be just the nature of taking horses that are used to these bigger open spaces, you know, and straighter lines and sweeping turns, and then putting them into, by comparison, a really tiny space in a riding ring. So yes. Do you have any advice for people like us who are transitioning horses from these, you know, if you've ever been to a track, like that's a big space, you know, the turns on the standardbred track are banked, you know, like it's a huge space. And then all of a sudden we're like, okay, 20 meter circle time. And that's not what they're used to. So how do you introduce a small space to horses like that?
Well, it's a very good question to ask, because a lot of people do forget that these horses are trained on large tracks. They're very well manicured. Your track man at the racetrack is your best friend. He's going to make sure that footing is phenomenal and fast. So there's no divots, there's no tight turns, you know, things like that. So when we bring them in as equestrians and we ride in a arena, and most of the time it's in an indoor arena, that's a whole new concept for a standardbred, because they've always been outside. So to ride inside, first of all, is very, very new. And then depending on the size of your arena, you're going to like put them in a smaller space. And in our book, we talked a lot about that they're always used to going on a following, whether that be a driveway or a track or something. They're used to like following, walking down the road in an arena, wide open. As equestrians, you know, there's nothing better than a well-drug arena. So you go in there and it's this wide open space to them. So we start asking as equestrians, you know, we're going to go in a circle. Well, they don't know what that is. Most of our horses are very comfortable going to the left because that's the way they race. And they're not so comfortable going to the right. So we just start again. We usually have a person lead them around the arena and get them to learn to go forward. Just very basic stop. They have to be taught to back, and then start working on bending left to right and getting to give their face to the bit. Just very, very basic kind of things. And once they're pretty good at that, then you can start working perhaps on circles. We do teach them to lunge at new vocations. All of them do know how to do that, but that again is very foreign to them. It takes them a little time. How they move on a lunge line may not be how they're going to move once you're on their back. Adding the weight of the rider does change things for a standardbred, because again, their muscles have been just used to pulling a cart. So that also can change how they move. But it's just very good to remember, you know, in our transitioning over standardbreds, we don't see them do the dropping of the shoulder, what you're describing. Sometimes that could just happen basically, again, with, like you pointed out, the size of your arena with your Percherons, the only way they could turn is to drop that shoulder, because it was a tight turn. And that's just a new concept for our horses, but they certainly can get over it, and they can learn the strength and gain the strength with the proper training and consistency, which I do end up saying a lot, I feel. Consistency is always our friend with these horses, because they've always been consistently trained from the time, you know, at broke as yearlings to, you know, their career could span up to 14 years of age. So their time at the track has been very, very consistent. And then to throw them in a small arena and ask them to bend is very foreign. So that does take some time.
For sure. Yeah. And I know you say this, you know, you're like, I always just say consistency. And it's, you know, I don't know if listeners are anything like me, it is really helpful to have somebody remind you to be consistent every 4 weeks. So I, for one, am very grateful for our training sessions when you're like, just be consistent and slow down and ask for small steps. And that is really if you think about all training, that's the route to get anywhere. So it is really, really helpful to have you, you know, reiterate that. And I came from a background of, you know, I had a trainer who was constantly like, chunk it down. And that also makes sense. So, you know, before you try to trot a 20 meter circle, can you walk a 20 meter circle?
Exactly.
Before you can walk a 20 meter circle, you know, can you walk in a few steps with bend, you know, and you just chunk everything down to the littlest step. So that makes so much sense. We're just you know, I think we tend to overlook, like, what does the horse know? What is the, and they know a lot. It's just not the same things that we're asking them for in an equestrian career. So
exactly. And they are quick learners and they learn very quickly with praise and breaking it down for them to little bits that they understand. So it's always a good reminder.
Yeah, I love that. So, all right. I think this horse that you have showed us tonight, which we love, by the way, just as soon as I opened his page, I was like, oh my gosh, what a cutie.
I honestly thought you made a mistake winning. I was like, why is she bringing a thoroughbred on Standardbred Week?
He does. He's got like not the, I love the standard, the quote unquote typical Standardbred face personally, because I just like the facial expression of mine, who just looks very disdainful all the time. But this horse is a little bit different from that. But speaking of a guy who knows his way around what he knows, how many starts has this horse had, Winnie? Tell us a little bit more about JM
Jetset. So this is JM Jetset, and he is just, like you said, he's a gorgeous, classy looking Standardbred. He raced 397 times. So that is probably one of the highest starts that we've had at New Vocations. We've had a couple over 400. But yes, as I mentioned before, Standardbreds can race once a week, and they can race through their 14th year. So this guy had a spectacular career. He earned almost $500,000. He just finished racing on February 1st. He obviously, as some of them do, have had many owners. So he was a claiming horse. He raced in claimers, but his last trainer, who's had him for a while, decided to stop that. And that's what, you know, started his retirement, because he didn't have a lot of options due to his age. And then he was slowing down. But he definitely loved his job and did it very well. And was, you know, has just, he was a barn favorite. He was a racetrack favorite in New York. He's very well known. And he's just been so much fun to work with and transition and watch him develop, as he has on his video. You could see him learning to carry a rider and learning to go in an arena and what that means. He's obviously very good to drive. Anybody can drive him.
Oh, he's very cute. I didn't watch his videos before, so I'm watching them now. So if I sound like I'm distracted, it's because I'm watching how cute this horse is. He's got a lovely walk. Wow. He can really cover ground.
Yes, he can cover ground. Yes.
He's got a nice sport horse build, and you can tell he's taking everything in, like, through his eye. Like, he's really trying to figure out what the riders are asking of him. I actually love in his video, it really goes well with what we talked about in the training tip. You can see where he's learning to hold his balance while holding a rider for the first time, going in a circle, and that you can tell he's like, I'm not quite sure, but he's really like game for it at the same time.
Right, right. And I think that, like you pointed out, that video is good. That's probably his fifth or sixth ride in that video, that he is just still figuring out where his legs go. Some people would be like, what is he doing? Is he lame? I don't understand that. He did race on the pace, but he's comfortable trotting, but he still will, he will pace too. Like, he's just, he's still figuring things out, and he's going to get it figured out. And he's changed a lot since we've had him, but his demeanor is really great. He's just a super kind horse. He wants to please. He seems to be happy so far, you know, since coming off the racetrack. So, well, I'm excited to see what he does. These war horses like him are some of my favorite, because they've just given so much and done so much, and they're so wise. They have a lot to offer.
No, he seems really cool. Like, you can't train a good brain. I'm going to say that. You can just tell, like, even though he might not know where his legs are in these particular videos, I'm very curious to see where he is today. You can just tell, like, he's relaxed. He's taking it all in. He's waiting for the rider to guide him, which for a horse who is 14 years old and has never been ridden, that's great trust that he has in people. Like, that's a horse you want in the barn.
Yes.
And a cool guy.
If you look at his legs in the photos, I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, he's in beautiful condition. Like, you can tell he was very, very well cared for through that long career, because to see the clean legs like that, and like shiny and great body condition. Like, he looks like a million bucks.
Yeah.
This is what I love about Standardbreds too. Like, I'm watching the video and I'm like, you know, I do not like colt starting. Like, I do not like to ride two-year-olds. That's too much responsibility. Me either. But like this, you get all the fun parts of cult starting, but without the like baby brain. Like the,
yes, you don't have like, the angry teenage angst.
Right. Like it's not going to just blow up and kill you. Like this guy's like, I don't get it, but I'll figure it out. Like, wow, what a guy. I love him.
We love him too.
Yes. Everybody who is like me and is like, cult starting is not my jam, but I also really want to start a cult. This is what you want. You want a horse like this.
Yes. And he's a great height. He's 16 hands. He is bay, meaning you're going to save on all of those grooming products. No offense to our grays out there, but you are an extra bill. We know that. And his adoption fee is 1500. So you're getting a very sporty looking horse who, with the new leveling system at New Vocations, he mostly scores a one. And that's pretty solid, except in physical capabilities. So for those who are looking for a horse who is calm in the brain, loves to be handled, all that good stuff, but is ready to go and hang out and do some work with you, Jet's going to be your man.
Whitney, do you know the time difference between these two videos? Because I'm watching the second one now and it looks like a very different horse. Like he's like, I don't know how many rides have elapsed between them, but I'm like, wow.
Yes, I would say probably four or five rides in between. I know the first one was one of his first videos. So that was, you know, the second one was done, a week and a half, 2 weeks later.
Okay. Yeah. Everyone needs to go and watch those too, because it is such a transformation between videos. That's amazing. Yeah. The way like the self-carriage that he has in the second video and the cadence and the rhythm, like, yeah, the first one you can tell he's like, I don't get it, but I'm going to do it. And the second one, holy smokes, this horse looks, I don't want to say finished, but I mean, he looks so much more further along.
Yeah. He's going to come along quickly, like in a good, consistent program with someone who knows what they're doing. And by knows what you're doing, you can also be working with a trainer. You don't want to intimidate anybody. But like he's going to go quickly. You can tell he's going to figure it out really fast. So yeah,
this guy's cool.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing him, Vinny. We appreciate it. Yeah. JM Jet Set. You can check him out at horseadoption.com. You do, for anyone who's new to our show, you do need to get your application in to be an approved adopter first. So make sure you get your application in. Even if you're not sure of the horse you want, if you're approved, it makes it a lot faster when that horse does come up. And if you're interested in a standard bred, Winnie is available to help answer any questions you may have and find the right horse for you. Winnie, thanks again for joining us. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you guys so much.
You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Retired Racehorse Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram at The Horseback Rider and on Facebook at Jobber Bill Racehorse to Ranch Horse. My email is changed, wait for it, Kristen at horseradionetwork.com.
She's official, y'all. It took 2 years, but she's official.
Here I am.
You can find me on Instagram at MisfitMare, and my email is joy@horseradionetwork.com. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products, Cashel Company, and to our amazing partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, at horseradionetwork.com. Remember to set your goals high and love to learn from every ride
and add more leg.
Bye, guys.